Want to be able to share the thought the Lord has given us. I've got a few statements I hope will stick in our mind, if I can remember how I intend to say it. So I have a word I'm going to write on the board this morning. So I want to talk to us today with the help of the Lord about accusation. I'm guessing that all of us here have met accusation in our life. And sometimes I feel like that's one of the major deterrents to blissful living in our world is the accusations that come against us. By definition, accusation means the act of charging with a crime or offense, the act of accusing of any wrong or injustice. And I know accusation has been in the news over the past week. We've probably listened to or heard reports of the development of the accusations that in the leaderships of our nation, especially those that's been talked about in the last week or so. But I've been thinking about accusation that comes against us. And I want us to realize that accusation is something that I'm not. It's one thing to for an accusation to be made and it be a truthful accusation. If there is guilt involved, the dynamics of an accusation changes entirely. But if the party that's being accused is not guilty, then it's still something that we have to deal with. And all of us here have met that at various levels. I can remember one time in working on a vehicle for a customer that someone came and picked up their vehicle after I'd worked on it, and they went out to get in the I can't even remember what it was. I just remember what the accusation was. The accusation was that I broke their steering column. And so I was just astonished that there was an accusation even being made. So I said, well, let me see what the problem is. So I walked out with the customer, and they had owned this vehicle, I presume, since new. And they got in, and they said, see, the steering wheel is not in the same position that it used to be. It's broken. And it had a tilt steering column. And they never knew how to tilt the column before. It was one of those that you push the turn signal lever away from you, and it didn't have a separate little lever for the tilt. You push the turn signal lever away, and that's what released the wheel to tilt it. And when I showed them that they had a tilt steering wheel, of course, they felt bad that they had made the accusation, but it was still, they were not, it wasn't just a mild thing. They were pretty distressed about the whole thing. And you know, when they first made the accusation, but I was not guilty. I didn't break the steering column. It had a feature that the customer just wasn't aware of. And that's a pretty mild one, and I like for accusations to be resolved like that one was. But many times there's accusations made that aren't easily resolved. there can be accusations made that are very real in the accuser's mind and be just as false as the one I was just telling you about. All right? So we have to be prepared to know how to continue living in the face of accusations. Any accusation that's made is going to interrupt your flow of life. If someone, it don't matter what the accusation is, if someone accuses you of eating too much food, immediately, if nothing else, the harmony that you had felt with that person is interrupted. I'm not saying it can't be restored, but there's an interruption in that. If somebody tells you that whatever you're doing wrong, it may be completely hollow. It may not have any impact really on what has actually happened or what is going to happen, but it just causes there's something that happens right there. It is an interruption. There's always a sense of weight or responsibility. Because if someone accuses me of something, we feel a sense of responsibility to display something different than that. I don't want to say we always feel like we have to prove them wrong, but when we feel that we have been falsely accused, and that's what my message is about, is how we deal with false accusations. There is a weight there of how do I demonstrate that that's not the case. I don't know. The more I think about the many times that accusations have been aimed at me personally, the more I realize there has been. And maybe that's just something that the enemy does for me, and maybe I've got more than my fair share. I don't know. But I do know that we all face them.
Yes, that's true.
And it doesn't matter if you take a position on how you ought to discipline your children, how you ought to go about your job, how you ought to interact with your spouse, what kind of devotion you ought to have to attending service. There's going to be an accusation that comes. Somebody is going to say, "Well, that's not right. You're all mixed up and you're confused, and that's not the way you ought to do it." And then we have, what do we do with that? That's the weight I'm talking about. What do we do with that sense of something needs to be changed here? I don't like people to think that I'm doing something wrong. Do you?
No.
I don't either. I just don't like that feeling that others think that I'm doing something that's not acceptable. Okay? So, many times, this is something I believe, that many times that the accusation comes from a sense of failure on the accuser's part. People that make accusations may realize that they are a miserable failure at being a parent, and they can accuse you of being overbearing. They can be a miserable failure at paying the bill, keeping enough money coming in to pay the bills, and they can accuse you of being a workaholic.
Yeah.
It can happen. They can feel like that they've never really achieved what they should have achieved in life. It might be in education, it might be in status or something like that. And the way they deal with it is accuse other people of maybe taking advantage of opportunities. I've seen it happen, not to just me, but I've seen it happen to my family members. Statements that are made like, you don't know who they climbed on top of to get where they were. It's an accusation. Well, what do you do with it? You have to deal with it, at least in your own mind. You may not even ever be able to address it with the accuser itself. But I know this, that we can be overwhelmed with accusations, whether it's the number of them or the type of them. And if we allow ourselves to be overcome with accusations, it'll end up having an impact on our ability to have victory in our soul, in our spirit. And we don't want that. I will tell you that it takes a much stronger, much more mature person to communicate that there is something that's not going right, and offer a plan for recovery than it does to just make an accusation. You know, it's one thing to accuse somebody of being arrogant, and it's another thing to communicate that another person's actions make someone feel intimidated. And can I suggest that when you talk to them, you don't put your hands on your hips, or just something. You see what I'm saying? Well, you're just an arrogant person. Well, that's an accusation. But it's another thing to say, you know, when you talk to people, you come across as they don't know what they're doing. So here's my suggestion. It takes a much more mature, much more strong individual to be able to do that. You know that our Heavenly Father doesn't operate with accusations. Does God accuse you? You're either guilty or you're not, right? You either are approved of God or you're guilty of something. And here's one of the big secrets in living for God. If he is working with you and dealing with you about something, you'll know what it is. It won't be just a sense or an atmosphere as accusations, but you'll know what you need to work on. You know why that is? Because God is strong enough and mature enough to communicate to us a plan of restoration and redemption. He is not out to make us feel bad. He wants us to be successful. And He's not going to come across to us with just an accusation that you're wrong. He's going to offer us an opportunity to make right the things that we're doing wrong. And when we are doing something wrong, we ought to feel guilty. But the guilt and accusation are two vastly different things. All right? Guilt, I'm going to give you my definition. Guilt is an inner sense of wrongdoing. You know, the scripture says, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. That's guilt, right? So we will know what we done wrong when we feel guilty. All right? But accusation is a communication of wrongdoing from an outside source. I remember one time on the job, I was working on a carburetor. I know that's kind of archaic for you younger men here, but I was working on a carburetor, and this fella that I worked with come over and watched me for a little while. Now, if somebody, he was old enough to be my dad, all right? So he comes over and he watches me, and I'm in my, I'm 24, 25 years old, something like that. And so he comes over and he watches me for a little while, maybe a minute or two, and that can be intimidating, right? When somebody that's older than you come and just kind of watches what you're doing. And so he watched me for a couple minutes, and then he's smoking his pipe, and he says, you're doing that wrong. He didn't say, I think you ought to put this part on first, or I think that's the wrong gasket. You really need this other little gasket in there. He didn't say that. He just said, you're doing that wrong. It's an accusation, all right? He wasn't willing, whether he wasn't strong enough or whether he wasn't mature enough, he wasn't willing to help me. But he wanted me to feel bad, right? That's accusation. It was coming from an outside source. I didn't feel guilty because I didn't think that I was doing it wrong. But he told me I was. And to this day, I don't know what I was doing wrong. He just said I was doing it wrong. And I remember thinking, what am I going to do? I mean, go through, what if I am so unconfident of what I'm doing that I don't even know if the thing will run when I put it back on the car? So I'm working on this thing, and I did not know what I could be doing wrong. I think it was just my method. He didn't like my method. So he told me, you're doing that wrong. So I'm going to try to develop this a little more with the help of the Lord. But what I told him at the time, what I responded to him, because how do you respond to accusations when somebody comes and accuses you? Do you fly off the handle? You know, most of the time, you have to take an aggressive approach to accusation. If you don't, you'll succumb to it. All right? So, I thought, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. He won't tell me what I'm doing wrong. So I asked the man, I said, do you have something to do? And he said, kind of nodded his head. I said, why don't you go do it? Just go on. You know, I'm going to tell you that when someone accuses us and doesn't offer to give us, to help us understand, we're going to have to realize that it's important for us to be able to close that door and move on. All right? Of course, it's going to destroy us. There's no grace for accusations unless it's for the individuals making them. I believe God's got grace for us for the people that might make accusations. And there's no forgiveness for accusations unless you're the one making them. All right? I'm talking about false accusations. You can't have enough grace for, grace is for failure on our part. And grace is for dealing with difficult people and situations. All right? Accusations are very hollow, but they're very menacing. They're frightening. Okay? So I'd like to turn to Matthew, the 16th chapter. I want to read a few words here in Matthew chapter 16. And Jesus, if you read the whole chapter, I believe Jesus was really trying to help his disciples. He was giving them a lot of explanation, and he was trying to help them understand how things were going to play out and develop. So I'm going to begin reading maybe in the 13th verse and read down to the point I want to get to. It says, when Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? And they said, some say thou art John the Baptist, and some Elias, and others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. And he said unto them, but whom say ye that I am? And Simon Peter answered and said, thou art Christ, the Christ, the Son of the living God. So Peter had the boldness to express his conviction. He said, you're the Christ. You're the Messiah. You're the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered and said unto him, blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. If you didn't have a relationship with God, you wouldn't have this real conviction. That's what he said. And I say also unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock will I build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. He's talking about the strong, solid foundation that he was the Messiah. He was the Christ. All right. He says, and I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Then charged he his disciples that they should tell no man that he was Jesus the Christ. Then from that time forth began Jesus to shew unto his disciples how that he must go unto Jerusalem and suffer many things to the elder of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and he be killed and raised again the third day. So Jesus then went into details of what was going to transpire, and he was explaining to his disciples. He was trying to equip them and prepare them for the development in the few days or in the short time ahead that he was going to be, he was going to go through some difficult times, that he was going to be killed and raised again the third day. And I believe it took more than what I just read. I believe he expounded on that to his disciples. Then Peter, this the same man that had this real revelation and conviction from God the Father that Jesus was the Christ, this same Peter took him and began to rebuke him. He's talking to Christ now. He began to rebuke him, saying, be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee. But he turned and said unto Peter, get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men. So this man that just a few verses above this said, there's only one way that you're able to have that kind of perception and understanding. It's because my Father, which is in heaven, gave it to you. That's the only way. And now he says, get thee behind me, Satan. Why did he address it like that? Here's why I believe he did. Peter was accusing Jesus of not knowing what he was doing. He was telling Jesus, now, let's be reasonable. This can't be happening. He was telling Jesus, you don't know. You don't understand. He was coming across that he was really, you know, accusations can be pretty slickly packaged sometimes. Sometimes somebody can come along and portray that they are our closest ally and yet make an accusation. And it can feel very painful when that accusation becomes apparent. And Jesus recognized it for what it was. Peter, I believe, was accusing Jesus, not because he intended to hurt Jesus, but because he thought he knew better. And maybe he didn't even recognize where the thought was coming from. The thought was coming from the enemy. You know, accusations come from the enemy. It's not just from other people. And one of the most difficult things that we have to deal with is accusations from the enemy. It's not, you know, sometimes people make accusations toward us and we realize that they just really don't understand. Somebody can make an accusation that we're always late to something. And maybe they really don't understand why we're late. And we can have grace for them. And we can have some compassion towards them and know that if they knew what we knew, that they would understand. But the enemy is not that way. The enemy, we're not required to have grace or patience with the enemy. All right? We can call Satan who he is. And we can say, get thee behind me, Satan. And I believe that Jesus said this because he knew that if he didn't address the accusation head on, it would gain momentum. Have you ever heard of an accusation being made in a group setting that didn't get some comments? It's not very often. A lot of times an accusation can be made and somebody said, well, that's what I thought too. You know, I thought that they were kind of stingy, or I thought they were kind of arrogant, or all of those kind of things. So my point here this morning is, when accusations come, we need to reconcile it. If it's true, if an accusation is presented, whether it comes from another individual or if it comes from the enemy and it's just in our mind, he's just speaking to us through our mind, so to speak. If it's true, then there's guilt involved. And if there's guilt involved, we can do business with that. But if it's just a hollow, empty accusation, we need to reconcile it. And say, I reject that. I am not going to accept that. I know that's not true. Somebody tells you that you're not even... How do you even claim to be saved and act like that? Well, it's an accusation. You know, we better, if we're guilty, then ask God to help us with that. And let's do business with it. If it's not guilty, then we have to dismiss it. We have to tell the devil he needs to go on somewhere else. I'm not going to embrace that. But if we just kind of wallow around and wonder and it causes us to begin to think, and it's one thing to ask God to search our heart and see if there's any wicked way in there. That's what the psalmist said. And what did he say? If there is something wrong, clean me up. Create a clean heart in me, O God. That was his prayer. But if it's just an empty, hollow accusation, we're going to have to reconcile it. We're going to have to say, that's not true. Jesus said to the same man, or in the same man's presence, I don't know that he was calling Peter Satan, all right? I don't believe that. But he was calling the accusation for what it was. He said, that's an offense to me. And I'm not going to accept it. All right? If accusations are not dealt with, it will develop into something that will produce guilt. Have you ever known someone that struggled with accusations to the point that they felt that they were guilty? At least guilty of not having courage enough to reject them? It can be a terrible thing. It can be an overpowering thing of one accusation leading to another accusation to something else. I'd like to turn to Matthew, the 27th chapter, and notice another accusation that was false. Matthew 27 and 37 is the verse we want to look at. Jesus here is at the scene of the crucifixion, and he's on the cross, and three of the Gospels record this. He says, and set up over his head this accusation written, this is Jesus, the King of the Jews. And there were, in other couple places, there were those that wanted them to change that to where it didn't say, this is Jesus, the King of the Jews. They wanted it to be changed to where it said, he saith he's the King of the Jews. Which was a false accusation too. He said, my kingdom is what? Not of this world. Else my servants would fight. He came to promote a spiritual kingdom, and he's still here to support a spiritual kingdom. But there was an accusation, and it was put over his head, and he had no way to change it, but he committed it to the Lord, to his Father. You know, Jesus departed this mortal life with accusations literally hanging over his head. You know, I know I'm not any better than Jesus. In fact, I'm a whole lot less than Jesus was when he was here on this earth. And to think that I can go through life and not have to struggle with or have accusations hanging over my head, I feel like is too unrealistic. The fact is, there's going to be people, and there's going to be the enemy, Satan, is going to level accusations at us. And we may go out of this world with an accusation hanging over our head. An accusation can feel like the most unfair thing that we face in life. Especially when it's empty and it's not true. But you know, accusations have no more power to make us guilty than praise does to make us proud. Accusations won't make us guilty if they're false. And praise won't make us proud if we will give, pass the praise on to whom it's due. So I want to challenge us this morning that accusations need to be dealt with, like Peter was dealt with, and the accusation that Peter presented. It needs to be dealt with straight up. And accusations are a fact of life. We're going to meet them. We're going to have to contend with them. We're going to have to realize that we can't get them all out of other people's mind. You know, I wish that we had some kind of way of removing accusations from other people's minds that they feel toward us. But we don't. And they're going to come. So, I would like to turn now to Revelations, the 12th chapter. And a notice here, a passage of scripture. I want to end up at the 10th verse, and maybe I thought maybe we would read it all, but maybe we don't need to. We have a picture here in the 12th chapter of Revelations of the dispensation of salvation and the spiritual kingdom of Christ being introduced into the world. That's what he's talking about when he's talking about the woman clothed with the sun. He's talking about the early morning church. And it goes through and gives us some details of how the church came under persecution from paganism and how that paganism was overthrown right in the middle of apostasy developing, and how that the church went into the wilderness or went into hiding. And we know that until the Reformation happened in the early 1500s, there's a big date, that the church was not a spiritual spirituality and a relationship with God was not mainstream. But we find here in the 10th verse, he said, "I heard a loud voice saying in heaven," and I believe it's talking about the spiritual heaven. I'm not talking about necessarily the dwelling place of God or the sky that the sun and the moon is in. He says here, "I heard a voice saying in heaven, now has come salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which has accused them before our God day and night." We live in a time that we can be victorious over the enemy that wants to bring accusations. If you today are struggling with accusations from the enemy of you're not spiritual enough, you're not doing this, or you're not doing that, or you're not in a place that you ought to be, we can rebuke the enemy and we can tell him to get behind us, like Jesus said to the accusation that was presented to him. He can rebuke that, and we can too, with the help of the Lord. I want to challenge us today to take an aggressive stance on accusations. All right? I remember one time a story that I was told as a young boy. And I want to talk to us now about, in closing, I want to talk to us about our solution for accusation. And the only solution that we have, because we can't necessarily get it out of somebody else's mind, we can resist it, we can know in our hearts and our minds that the accusation is false and hollow. And that's where our victory comes, is in having confidence. All right? Brother Sammons used to tell us when I was a young person that we can have a no-so salvation. And I believe we can. We can't have a no-so salvation and guilt in our life at the same time. But we can have a no-so salvation and rebuke accusations. All right? So here's my story, and this is the real solution for accusation, is having confidence and assurance in our heart. I told a story about an uncle of mine, a great uncle of mine, that needed a car. And he went to a pretty unlikely place to find his next car, at least for most of us. He went to the junkyard, and he showed up with a box of tools, and And he said, I'm looking for a car. And they said, well, you know, you're welcome to look around all you want. And he went out and found an old car that was setting up on the side of the hill, and he decided that's the one he wanted. So he went back down to the fella, and he told him that's the old, I don't know for sure what it was, but it's an old car up there. And he said, that's the one I want. And the guy said, well, it hadn't run in however long. He said, it's been out there a long time. So he took his little box of tools and he went out and he worked on that car. I don't know how long. I don't know if he would have, was the type of person that would have pulled the inner tubes out and patched the tire and put it all back together. I don't know all that he did to it, but I know that he looked it all over. And he got everything fixed or adjusted or whatever needed to be done. And he, to me, this is a real portrayal of confidence. He puts his tools in his toolbox, put his toolbox in the car, and gave the old car a kind of a push and got it rolling down the hill and jumped in. And jumped in and he put it in gear, turned the switch on and let out on the clutch and got it started on the way down the hill. And he drove it out the gate, settled up with the man, and drove it home. Now that was his new car. Well, I'm going to tell you, to check things out and then put your tools in the car and give it a shove off down the hill, there had to be some confidence. You couldn't be dealing with a bunch of accusations there and thinking, I don't know if it's going to have any spark, and I don't know if whatever. But, you know, we're going to face a lot of things in life where we feel like we're just being shoved off over the down the hill. And I want us to realize we have to cultivate. If you're struggling today with accusations and you don't know how to say, get thee behind me, Satan, that is simply not true. That is not a fact. I do love my husband. I do love my wife. I do love the Lord. I do want to live for Him. Whatever the accusation is. And we're struggling with knowing how to rebuke the enemy. We're struggling knowing how to cope with some kind of label somebody is trying to hang over our head, knowing that it's not true. I want to go to one last verse, 1 John the 3rd chapter. And notice what he says here. This is St. John, not St. John, but 1 John the 3rd chapter. So Apostle John writing this, 19th verse. He says, and hereby we know that we are the truth and shall assure our hearts before Him. For if our heart condemn us, God is greater than our heart and knoweth all things. Did you know that if there is something that makes us feel condemned, that God already knows about that? And if we're struggling with something and we feel condemned about it, you know, many times people come to an altar of prayer and they think they're feeling condemnation. And you may ask them, well, what is it that the Lord has told you that you need to do different? Well, He hasn't told me. Well, why would He make you feel guilty if He hadn't told you what it was? And it's simply because He won't. He won't make you feel guilty without telling you what it is. And that's when we realize the enemy is making you feel guilty for an accusation. I want the enemy to be exposed, not just today, but every day. I want his dealings to be apparent, but I'm going to tell you, he's a real slick one. And he can cause us to feel guilty and accused when there's nothing to it. It's not right. So, Lord, help us to know how to differentiate between an accusation and guilt. He says here, God is greater than our heart. He knows the thoughts and intents of our heart, doesn't He?
Yes.
That's what the Scripture says. And if He knows what's going on in our heart, and He knows what our propensities are, and He knows what we've actually done, don't you think that He would tell us what it is that we need to change? I believe He will. I'm basing my spiritual life on that. I am standing on the foundational principle that if God knows I'm doing something that is not acceptable in His sight, He's going to tell me what it is. He's going to show me in the Word. He's going to communicate to me distinctly. That's a bad attitude. You shouldn't be feeling that way towards your brother or your sister. You shouldn't be harboring these kind of thoughts. And we're going to know what it is. But if there's this cloud of confusion and we just feel oppressed and guilty, many times it's the enemy coming along. And I don't know what else Peter said to Jesus, but he could have said, "You're our Lord and Master." And maybe he felt like he was on a roll because Jesus had told him, the only way you know that is because God revealed it to you when He said that thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And maybe he felt confident that he could be a help to Jesus. You know, Lord, help us to not get in a place where we feel like we can be a help to Jesus. We can only be a vessel in His hand. That's all I'll ever be. And when I start giving God advice, I'm in trouble. Because I'm going to be telling Him something He already knows, or He knows that I'm wrong and He's right. And it's going to be an accusation, and I'm going to be rebuked. And then I'll be needing to deal with that. I hope I'm not making this confusing. I hope I'm making it clear. God's greater than our heart, and He knows all things. He says, "Beloved, if our heart condemn us not, then have we confidence towards God." I want to challenge us to be like the psalmist said in Psalms 139 and invite the Lord regularly. "Lord, sincerely, search my heart and see if there's something wicked in there. And Lord, if there's something, I want a clean heart. I want to be acceptable in your sight." We have to live. And when we know that we are praying through, we know that we're making ourselves vulnerable before the Lord, we know that He is hearing our prayer and that we're receiving that witness in our spirit. You know, His Spirit bearing witness with our spirit. We know that we've got the air cleared up between us. Then, Lord, help me to be able to resist the enemy and say, "Get behind me. I'm not accepting this. I'm not going to dwell on it." And I want y'all to know that I'm talking to myself as much as I'm talking to you. I deal with accusations. Did I do the right thing? Did I say the right thing? Is what they said, you know, the observation somebody else makes. Well, are they right and I'm wrong? Am I really that way? Lord, help us to know how to have the confidence that we ought to have. You know, that is our line of defense. If we do not have our confidence in our experience with the Lord and in our relationships with other people, you know, I don't want to go into a lot of details. I just want you to know, as I think about this some, I go back and my mind plays back to me the accusations that's been made by people that have told me I'm doing things wrong. If all of them were true, I would be in a terrible shape today because I haven't done hardly anything right. Everything I've attempted to do in life, somebody, I think, has told me, "You're doing it wrong." They've made an accusation. They've not approved of my method or my technique. I've had somebody say that almost everything in my life. And you probably feel that way too sometimes. I'm telling you this morning, I don't want you to be overwhelmed by accusation. I don't want you to succumb to it. I want you to address it as soon as possible. Each individual thing. If it's the enemy, rebuke him. You got the power. We live in that dispensation. You can rebuke him. If it's someone bringing a false accusation to you, then maybe you can't say to them, "Get thee behind me, Satan," but you can simply say, "That's not a true statement. I can't accept that." Lord, help us to examine ourselves and have confidence, and help us to know how to resist the accusations. I want us to be victorious, every one of us. You pray for me.